Remember back in third grade with Miss Platt's class, and one of the things that we learned how to do was write a letter. We learned the format for writing a letter and how you put your address at the top, and then you put dear and whoever you were writing it to, and then the things you would include in the letter, and then the way you would close a letter. What Miss Platt taught us was there was a format for the way, proper way to write a letter. Well, the ancient world also had a format for writing a letter. There were kind of conventions that were followed, things that were certainly part of it. And so we've been reading a part from 1 Peter, which is a letter from a man named Peter to a church. And it follows a format. There's a greeting at the beginning, and it usually goes a little bit different than ours. We would just simply say, dear so-and-so. And in an ancient letter, it would say, from whoever it was, so you knew right away who it was from, to those people. And then there might be some sort of prayer, maybe a special greeting. And then maybe a little bit of a summary of what the letter was going to be about, and then the main body of the letter. And the letter then would close with kind of final salutations and greetings, maybe greetings to other people who are there, because when you wrote a letter, it was kind of rare and it was going to another place, and you maybe wanted to say hello to some other people and give them special greetings. And so today we're reading a portion from this man named Peter, who wrote a letter to a church, or to actually a group of churches, to a group of believers. So who was Peter? Peter was one of the early followers of Jesus. He followed Jesus. He was one of Jesus' disciples. And if you've read the stories of Jesus, you may recognize that man, Peter. He was the one who got excited and jumped out of a boat to go to Jesus, and then he got a little bit scared and he started to sink. Peter was impetuous. He was rambunctious. He would kind of just say what was on his mind. He was the one who near the end, he said to Jesus, I'll never give you up. I'll follow you. Jesus, everybody else will turn away, but not me. Well, guess what? He did too. But he was also the one when Jesus asked him, who am I? And Peter said, you are the Messiah, the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus said to him, you are Peter, the rock. Peter just simply means the rock. And on this rock, I will build my church, on this confession that Jesus is Lord. And so Peter was this close follower of Jesus. And even though Jesus had betrayed him, or he had betrayed Jesus, reverse that. He had betrayed Jesus. Jesus forgives him and invites him back in and gives him this special place. And now, after the resurrection of Jesus, Peter is writing to churches. He's going around telling the world about who Jesus is. And he writes to this group of churches. But at the beginning of the letter, he has a very curious way of greeting them. And then a strange way of ending the letter. So the letter begins this way. It says, this letter is from Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ. So an apostle, one who was sent by Jesus Christ. He said, I am writing to God's chosen people who are living as foreigners in the provinces of Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. Writing as foreigners, living as foreigners, and some translations will say exiles or sojourners. People are living in these strange names that you read, you probably don't recognize, but that's what modern-day Turkey. Essentially, is where he's writing to these group of people living there, and he calls them foreigners or exiles or sojourners, which is kind of a strange language to use. But that word exiles, for the biblical audience then, drew up images and ideas. For God's people, one of the major stories in their history was the exile. We as Americans have major stories that shape our history. A Revolutionary War, a Civil War, significant events in our history that shape and identify us as who we are as a people. Well, for God's people, the exile was one of those. So the exile was something that had happened about 600 years earlier. The empires of Assyria and then Babylon had come and conquered the people of God and taken them away from their homeland back to Assyria and then back to Babylon. And they placed them there in exile. So they lived in this place that wasn't their own. They were living in captivity far from their home. And so Babylon, where's Babylon? Babylon is essentially modern day Iraq. And so they've been taken from Israel off to modern day Iraq. And so when Peter says, you are exiles, you are foreigners, you're strangers, the people hearing this letter think, oh, exiles. Just like the people back then. But the thing was, there's a difference. They weren't hauled off into captivity at this point. They were simply living in those places. They aren't that kind of exiles. So what does Peter mean when he calls them foreigners, when he calls them exiles? Why would he be using that language? I think we get a little bit of a clue at the end of the letter to Peter. So we're kind of today, we're looking at this letter as a whole and this big thing, and we're in this study called Immerse. We're looking at the New Testament, and we're reading through it together, and we're doing it in a slightly different way. Oftentimes in our sermons, we go and we take one small passage and we look at it in depth. But what we've been trying to do here, what I've been trying to do, is maybe take a letter or a whole gospel and say, what's maybe a big theme, an idea that we can trace through it? And so today we're looking at this one called 1 Peter. And so at the end of this letter, Peter has this strange thing. He says, your sister church here in Babylon sends you greetings, and so does my son Mark. So Peter's writing and he says, so your sister church here in Babylon. Remember, Babylon is over here in Iraq. He's writing to the churches in Turkey here. But Peter isn't in Babylon. Babylon, by this point in history, it had been once been a great and majestic city, the center of power of this empire. And now it was pretty much abandoned. Where is Peter at this time? Probably in Rome. So is Peter confused on his geography? I mean, I know we all struggle a little bit with geography. Well, I struggle a little bit with geography, remembering where I am and what I'm doing. And I'm thankful for maps and I can look those things up. Is Peter confused as to where he is? Is he saying, oh, your sister church here in Babylon, when he's actually in Rome? No, he's using Babylon as a code word, as a cipher, as a way to say, when we think, hear the word Babylon, we think the powers that are opposed to God, the world powers that are hostile to who God is. And so Peter isn't alone in this language. It's language that's used throughout the Bible, this image of Bible. If you were to turn all the way to the end of your Bible, there's this book that a lot of us avoid because it's strange, it's confusing, all kinds of crazy things, called the Book of Revelation, the Revelation of St. John, the Apocalypse. And apocalypse doesn't mean violent end to the world. Apocalypse just means a showing forth, the revealing. That's so Revelation is an apocalypse. And in that, it talks about Babylon. And there's a whole section, particularly like around chapter 18, where it tells, fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. And it's a picture of all the world's powers and hostilities to God have fallen. And there's an invitation in there even to come out of Babylon. And so what Peter is doing here, I think, is he's using this language of calling them exiles, as he's calling them foreigners, and he's writing from Babylon, or that language he uses. He's drawing on all these pictures and images saying, I want you to think back to the stories you heard as a child. And so if you were a Jewish child, if you had grown up as one of the people of God, you heard stories. We all hear stories when we're growing up. And the stories they heard were the stories of what we call our Old Testament. And some of the major stories, again, are that exile, that time in Babylon. And one of the things that happened when they were in Babylon is the stories of Daniel. You ever heard the story of Daniel? The boy who goes, he's taken, he lives in captivity. And there in captivity, he rises to power. He lives among the people of Babylon. But then there's a point in time where he's asked to do something that's contrary to his faith. He's asked to stop praying to God, and he refuses to do it. And so the king has him thrown into a den filled with lions, and the lions don't eat him, and he's pulled out. He also has some compatriots of his that are given the name of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Again, they're called upon to bow down and worship this idol. And even though they're rulers and they've been given authority, they're acting as governors in Babylon. They refuse to give up their faith. And so they're thrown into this fiery furnace, and God saves them out of the fiery furnace. So when Peter writes and talks about exile, and when he talks about Babylon, all of a sudden you're thinking about all these stories, thinking about all these pictures of what it means. And so Peter is saying, you are like those people. You're like Daniel, you're like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You're like all the people of God who were taken into exile. He's reminding them of their identity, of who they are. He started off the letter saying they're chosen people. He said they're a holy nation, this section that we read. They're a people called by God. Remember this, chosen people, a royal priest, a holy nation, God's very own possession. That's their identity. And so in a sense, what he's saying is, When you're in exile, when you're a stranger, you don't belong there. And so, in 1 Peter 2:11, we read this. He said, "Dear friends, I warn you as temporary residents and foreigners to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very souls." Temporary residents and foreigners. And so one scholar, Karen Job, says it this way. She says, because all Christians are citizens of God's holy nation, they are to understand themselves as resident aliens and foreigners, wherever they may be residing. We're to regard ourselves as resident aliens and foreigners, wherever they may be residing. Or to go back to about the year 130, there's a letter we have called the Letter to Diognetus. The Letter to Diognetus was a letter written by an unknown person, but it was a defense of the Christian faith. It was a description of what it looks like to live the Christian life and to make it attractive and powerful. And this is what the Letter to Diognetus says. He says this, "For Christians are no different from other people in terms of their country, language, or customs. Nowhere do they inhabit cities of their own or live out of the ordinary. They inhabit both Greek and barbarian cities according to the lot assigned to each." In other words, Christians don't pick their own place. They don't set up their own little towns. They don't necessarily have different language or different customs. So a Christian in Nigeria, a Christian in Congo, a Christian in China, they have the same language. They have many of the same customs as the community around them. But he says this, they participate in all things as citizens. They live in their respective countries. But then he says, but only as resident aliens. They participate in all things as citizens, and they endure all things as foreigners. They live on earth, but participate in the life of heaven. And so what Diognetus is getting at, what Peter is getting at, is this idea of being a resident alien. How many of you are here are citizens of the United States? Most of us, right? We grew up here. We live here. We've become a part of this. And so, but he's saying you have another citizenship. You have something that's greater than that, that you are all resident aliens, that we are all exiles. Now, exiles are called to live where they live. The prophet Jeremiah wrote to the exiles in Babylon. In Jeremiah chapter 29, there's this letter from Jeremiah to the exiles in Babylon, and he says, seek the peace of the city. Have children, build houses, live there as people and be a blessing to those people. But he also says, but maintain your identity as people of God. And so this is what we're called to do, to live as these exiles, as these strangers. We're to seek the peace and the prosperity, but not to compromise. That was the story of Daniel. That was the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. To seek the prosperity, to live as good citizens of wherever you are. But at the same time, not to compromise. And so when Peter is writing to these exiles, these resident aliens, he's asking them the same thing. He's telling them the same thing. So how can we hear these words? How can we hear these words of what it means to be exiles? What it means to live the way of Jesus and not the way of Babylon? And so this section we read earlier, but you are not like that, for you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness and into his wonderful light. Or again, this other verse we just read. Dear friends, I warn you as temporary residents and foreigners to keep away from worldly desires that wage war against your very souls. So there's this picture of the call to do good, of being holy. And now that's one of those things that can kind of set us off a little bit depending on the church we grow up in, to be holy. And sometimes I can get a sense of like, oh, we have to separate ourselves, that we have to be better than others. But it's really a picture of eagerness to do good. That our living is a response to this call of God. That we're called to live in response to the new birth. And so earlier in the letter, Peter talked about we've been given a new birth in Jesus. This is language we use often. A new birth in Jesus. We've been given a new life. We've been given hope and salvation. And we're called to be like God. We're called to be holy. A holiness we find in relationship to God. We're called to be different, to be distinct. And so Dennis Edwards says it this way. On a practical level, he says, holiness means conforming to the ways of God. rather than the ways of the prevailing culture. He's getting at that same idea of holiness. The call to be an exile is to conform to the ways of God rather than the ways of the prevailing culture. Or for most of us sitting here, to ask ourselves, are we conformed to the ways of Jesus or the ways of the United States? Do we see the ways we are called to live and think differently? And living in a culture is hard because when we grow up in a culture, it's just the way we do things. We never imagine things are differently. So if you travel to a foreign country, as many of you have, you go somewhere and maybe you learned a particular way to greet someone. When we greet someone here, typically what do? We reach out and shake their hand. That's not what you do around the world, but we just think that's what you do. That's what culture is. It's just the way things are. It's the way we do things. The way you hand somebody money, the way you speak to someone, the way you address people, all those are part of culture. And it's difficult oftentimes to recognize our own culture. We don't recognize the way we live, and so we're called to exercise cultural discernment, to recognize what are the ways of God and how do they contrast with the ways of, and I'll say for us because here we are, the ways of America. Now, they're not always different. And I'm not saying that everything that we do as Americans is counter, but we have to remember we're exiles living in Babylon. And we're called to live differently. And so we read our Bibles, we soak in that, we spend time in community, we hear and we begin to see how are the things that we see around us different? How is the ways of Jesus different than the ways around us? So I want us to think about a couple of those and maybe begin to get you thinking about it. One of those is in terms of identity, about who we think of ourselves to be. So David Kinnaman and Mark Matlock wrote a book called Digital Babylon, about exiles in Babylon, but they talk about digital Babylon. They're talking about particularly younger generations and the way that the internet and digital society has shaped them. But one of the things they talk about is some of the ideas that exist in digital Babylon. It's not just digital Babylon, it's just particular culture we live in. So one of the ideas is something like this. You ever heard something like this? You discover the truth about yourself by looking inside yourself. You know, that who I am is, you know, I get to choose who I am. But Jesus says something different here. Peter says something different here. That the way of Jesus, that Jesus is our cornerstone, that he is the one who defines our identity. And so we begin to think, do I define for myself who I am? Do I get to decide who I am? Or do I let people around me tell me who I am? Or do I let the Creator say who I am and the kind of person I'm meant to be? And so the question of identity becomes one of those things. And do I look inside myself and say, oh, I know, I'm going to find my true self. I'm going to discover who I am by looking deeper inside myself, by pursuing my passions, by pursuing my dreams. That's what Babylon tells us. But Jesus says there's a different way. And then we find our identity in him. Now, there are choices. We're allowed choice. I mean, we make choices. But the truest things are what our Creator says about us. So we can think, one, in terms of Babylon and being exiles, about our identity and how it's shaped, how it's formed, how it's defined. Is it the way that Babylon decides or the way that Jesus decides? Second way I want us to think about the way we distinguish ourselves, the what it looks like to live as a foreigner, is the way we use our words. So Peter says this. He says, don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. This is what God has called you to do, and he will grant you his blessing. For the scriptures say, if you want to enjoy life and see many happy days, keep your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from telling lies. Now, this isn't new to Peter. Peter's not the only place in the Bible where we can talk about the use of our words, the way we speak to other people. One scholar said it this way. He says, words matter because words put on notice the nature of one's character and commitments. Words put on notice the nature of... So by the words we speak, and I would say in digital Babylon, the things we post, as well as the words we speak, they reflect who we are. And so we ask ourselves, do the words we use, do the words we speak Do they reflect Babylon or do they reflect Jesus? And so Peter talks about two things. He talks about insults and deceitful speech. So what's the opposite of insults? It's respect. So Peter says this way, he says, respect everyone. Okay, so who do we get to not respect? No one. Respect everyone and love the family of believers. Fear God. And then just almost reaffirm and respect the king. And when he's talking the king here, want us to remember probably writing around the time of Nero, one of the Roman emperors. Probably it depends exactly, it's a little difficult to date exactly when Peter was writing, but none of the Roman emperors were good guys as far as the Christians were concerned. But Nero was particularly egregious. Nero had a desire to rebuild Rome in his image and remake it in his great power. So he deliberately burned Rome down. He's like, well, if I burn it down, then I can start it over again and make it the way I want it to be. Well, imagine you're a Roman citizen and this country, the city gets burned down. There was no fire insurance. There was no State Farm back then. So if your house burned down, you were just out of luck. And so then you're looking like, hey, whose fault is this? Nero's like, Christians! And points to them and then goes on and continues to persecute the Christians. And so here now, Peter is writing to these people in exile, some of whom were driven from Rome by this persecution. And he says to them, respect the king. What do you mean? Respect him? How can I respect this guy who is taking Christians, dipping them in tar and lighting them on fire as service torches for his dinners? And you're calling me to respect him? Now, respect doesn't mean you agree with him. Respect doesn't mean you show loyalty to him. But we can disagree without disrespecting. So now it's 2024 here in the United States, here in Babylon. And we have this thing that happens every 4 years, which you are all excited about. The Olympics, right? And an election. In an election, we have a choice. We have two candidates that we're down to. Now, some of you may be in favor of one candidate, some of you may be in favor of the other. But I would remind you of the words of Peter, to respect the king. To respect those. So the question is, how do we speak about those? Now, we may be, certainly, if we're talking about our own candidate, we don't have a problem. But when we refer to the other candidate, do we use derogatory language and insults and demeaning things? Do we refer to him as the big orange man or the senile old babbling, you know, Biden? Whatever kind of language. Peter's saying that is not the way of Jesus. That's the way of Babylon. That's not the way of Jesus. We need to be better. Again, I'm not saying you have to like the other person. You don't need to agree with them. You don't need to give them your loyalty. But we do need to show respect for everyone. Those who are in the position of authority, those authorities, and also the people who support them. So they're not fascists or libtards. They're people who have a disagreement with us. And so, people of God, he's calling us. He's saying, you live differently. Babylon does that. There are comedians. There are people who make their living developing insults and ways to mock other people. The people of God are called to live differently. A holy people, a chosen people, a royal priesthood, called to demonstrate the goodness and the grace of God. And so we're called to speak goodness and show respect. It's not just politicians. Maybe it's at the local ball field. And I've been at games lately, you know, when Anna was playing softball. And you hear the language coming from people in the stands around you. Maybe it's about the other team or it's about the referee or the umpire. And we have to stop and ask ourselves, are the words I use, are they holy words? Again, you can disagree. There are some terrible calls made out in the field. But we show respect by the way we use our words, by the way we speak about other people. So Peter highlights respect as one of the ways that we demonstrate that we're followers of Jesus, one of the ways that we live as holy people, one of the ways that we live as foreigners and exiles is by showing respect. The other thing he talks about is avoiding deceitful speech, to being truthful in the things that we say. And so again, in today's world, one of the catchphrases often used is the idea of fake news, disinformation, misinformation. And so one of the things we can do when we think about not using deceitful speech, because there's the kind of intentional, he's talking one about the intentional kind of lies we tell, but we could also translate it to modern day Babylon here of the way we share and we say things. When we hear a story, to take the time and think for a few minutes and do a little bit of research and say, is it true before I share it? Before I tell other people about it? One of the things we can simply do is when we hear something, when we hear a story, and it fits our idea of what the world's like. We hear a story that says, oh, there are schools out on the West Coast and they're setting up litter boxes for kids who think they're cats. We think, oh yeah, that's what the liberals are doing. It's not true. But it sounds like something that they might do, because if we have our picture of the way the world works, we think, oh, maybe that's the way things are. If we hear a story that says there were some protesters at the Golden Gate Bridge in California and they replaced the American flag with a Palestinian flag, it's not true. That there was a Navy ship struck by a Houthi missile, no, it's not true. That Donald Trump mistakenly called Melania Mercedes, no, it's not true. That Joe Biden was giving $5,000 gift cards to immigrants, it's not true. But so often we hear a story and it fits our idea, our picture of the world. It feels like it's a way to put down, it's a way to elevate our image, it's a way to think our picture. And so we just tell everybody about it. What I would encourage us to do, people of God, is stop, take a moment, and do a little bit of research. It's hard. It's a lot easier to just say, oh yeah, did you hear that? To pass it on social media, it's so easy to click share and just tell everybody about it. But Peter says, the words we use are important. And why I think it matters whether or not we're truthful kind of people is because we are going around telling people this crazy story that there was a man who was crucified, dead, and buried. God raised him from the dead, and in him there is life, and in him there is no other way of salvation. That's an incredible story. But if we are known as people of truth, people who are committed to those being honest and using true words, people will be far more likely to believe us. If instead we're regularly known as people who are saying, you know, Bigfoot is the king alien who's taking all his people everywhere to live at the far end of the flat earth, then people might be less likely to believe us on other things. So we need to stop and we need to take a moment. And it's hard. It's hard in a world where there is so much information and it's so hard to do those things. And even for some people, even the idea of fact-checking sounds like some sort of political. It's basically what we are called to do is to be people of truth and to understand what's true and what's not. And if you're not sure, then just don't tell anybody about it. Wait and figure it out. But one is, does it confirm your bias? Check a couple different sources. Go a couple places. If it says there was a story on CNN or Fox, go look on CNN or Fox and find out if that was really the story. Is it hard work? Yes. Being a follower of Jesus is hard work. But we're called to live different, not people who live by these things. It's hard work, but it's necessary. So the final thing he says is, he says we're to abstain from sinful desires, or he talks about the empty way of life. So again, the modern world in which we live, you should pursue what you desire most. You know, you be you, right? Babylon tells us that efficiency is the greatest. You know, that's one of the, you go to a bookstore, go to Barnes and Noble, And there's this huge section on self-improvement and all the ways we can be efficient. I would invite you to look in the Bible somewhere. If you can find it somewhere, tell me where efficiency is one of the goals of life. Or money. We're money and power. We say, oh, well, I'm not so concerned about money. But we get wrapped around things. We say, well, as long as the economy's good, as long as I have a job, then everything's okay. Or we say things like this, as long as no one gets hurt. Or it doesn't matter what two people do in the privacy of their own home. And so these are the messages that we hear from Babylon that we're called to live out of. And so we can evaluate the content we consume and ask, what is it saying? Holiness doesn't say we can't go to movies. Holiness doesn't say we can't read books. But it does say we evaluate those and we question those and ask how they're shaping our ideas. And so we go in and we watch a movie and we say, what does it say about who God is? What does it say about the way to live our lives? For example, does the media that we consume teach us that violence is the solution? And so Bobby was talking about that, about kings. And that's violence is the solution. I've been watching a series on Apple TV called Masters of the Air, which is a story about bombers during World War II. This is a powerful show, and we think about the soldiers, and there's a little bit of tension, but they miss some important, powerful moments. And the question is this the solution? And this isn't to downgrade, say, well, we had to fight Hitler. That's not what I'm getting at. But this idea that so often, as Americans, as people living in Babylon, we've been conditioned by the books, the movies, the story we tell, that the solution to everything is to build a bigger bomb. When there's a problem, when we have an enemy, what do? We build bigger guns, we build bigger bombs so we can wipe them off the face of the earth. And Jesus has a radically different suggestion for us. To love your enemies, to pray for those who persecute you. And this is what Peter's telling the people here. Is this is the way they're to respect other people and to love them. Is our society's Babylon around us telling us that we need sex for fulfillment or that self-denial is unhealthy? We hear the message in Babylon in America that says, well, if you have a desire and you're denying it, I mean, there's something, you shouldn't be doing that. Because when we repress our desires, that's unhealthy. And so Christians, they're horrible because they tell you you're supposed to repress your desires and your wants and needs. Follow your heart, right? That's the message of Babylon. And if you follow your dreams, you'll be happy. That's Disney, right? And again, not to say that Disney is evil, but there's a message, an underlying sense of what Babylon is about. You watch most any show on television about a family. And what's one of the primary things that families do on television shows? They make fun of each other, right? They mock one another and they insult one another. And so we're conditioned by Babylon to believe that's the way. Is that the way of Jesus? You watch most American television about workplaces. And what is the nature of the workplace? It's filled with incompetent and dysfunctional people. And so we begin to believe that that's what it's like. And so we're being conditioned by the messages of Babylon. And so what Peter is inviting us to do is constantly ask the question, is this the way of Jesus or some other way? That we're called to live differently. We're called to live as exiles. We're called to live as strangers and foreigners. We're called to live the way of Jesus, which oftentimes runs counter to the way of society, which may not fit in, which is one of Peter's other messages. He says, now who will want to harm you if you're eager to do good or be zealots for good? He says, but even if you suffer for doing what is right, God will reward you. So don't worry or be afraid of their threats. So in other words, he's saying, sometimes what's going to happen when you do and follow the way of Jesus is people around you aren't going to like it. Now, we may not, and we don't here in America, suffer the same kind of persecution that they did in ancient Rome. We don't suffer the same kind of persecution that they do in other places around the world. But we can suffer being outcast, being mocked, being made fun of, being derided. We can feel pushed out to the side. But Peter's saying, if you suffer for doing what is right, God will reward you. Now, suffer for doing right, for doing good. And then it says, but he says, instead, be very glad when we're suffering. When people mock you, make fun of you, he says, be very glad. How many of you are glad when people make fun of you? He says, but that's the way of Jesus. He said, be very glad. And why? Because these trials make you partners with Christ. Because remember, what happened to Jesus when he obeyed and did the will of God? He was mocked. He was abandoned. He was scorned. He was rejected. And what Peter's saying is when we are doing what God wants to do, not when we're being jerks, not when we're being hard, but when we're doing and following the way of Jesus and we're mocked and scorned, we are partners with Christ in his suffering. He says that you will have the wonderful joy of seeing his glory when it's revealed to all the world. So in other words, don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. That is what God has called you to do, and he will grant you his blessing. So when we suffer mocking, when we suffer scorn, when we're pushed to the outside, we repay with a blessing. Some hard stuff, isn't it? But Peter ends, and this is where I want to end too, with an encouragement. He ends with a reminder of the foundation for living holy and a reminder of faithfulness in the face of persecution. He says this at the end of his letter. He says, in his kindness or in his grace, God called you to share in his eternal glory by means of Christ Jesus. So after you have suffered a little while, he will restore, support, and strengthen you, and he will place you on a firm foundation. He's saying the basis for our behavior is the salvation we have in Jesus. That Jesus has rescued us, that language that Peter used. He has called us out of darkness and into his light. He has given us a new birth. And it's all by grace. God has done this for us. He's brought us and made us into a new people. God's grace is what saves us, and God's grace is what sustains us. And so as we look to live as exiles in Babylon, we remember that God has called us out, that he has chosen us as his people, that he has declared us to be something different, that he has made us into something different by the death, the resurrection of Jesus, and by the sending of the Holy Spirit. He has made us into a new people, and he's calling us to live into that and to rest on God's grace to sustain us in those difficult times. And also in those challenging times to remind ourselves of a future hope. To remind ourselves of an enduring city. Of a precious inheritance that will not rust, spoil, or fade. We're called to live as exiles. And so let us live as good citizens of God, demonstrating the way of Jesus in the midst of the life around us. Saved by God's grace, empowered by God's grace, and with a hope set on Jesus, our cornerstone. Amen.